WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Mike Seeger is one of the musicians who helped spark the folk revival of the 50s and 60s. In 1958, he co-founded the New Lost City Ramblers, a group of middle-class urban musicians like himself who revived the old-time string band music of the rural South. In the 50s and 60s, Seeger also made many field recordings for Folkways Records. Some of his field recordings from the 50s and 60s that were never released are compiled on a new CD called Close to Home. We're going to hear some of those recordings and the stories behind them. Mike Seeger is part of one of America's most famous folk music families. His half-brother is Pete Seeger. His sister is folk singer Peggy Seeger. Mike's mother, Ruth Crawford Seeger, was a composer who also collected children's songs. Mike's father was musicologist Charles Seeger. The first track on Mike's new anthology features guitarist and singer Elizabeth Cotton. She's famous now in folk music circles, but she wasn't when this recording was made in 1952. I asked Mike Seeger how his family met her.
I met her at our home in Chevy Chase, Maryland. My mother had met her at a department store in Washington and asked her to help around the house. Elizabeth Cotton worked most of her life in people's homes, helping wash and cook and take care of children. And that was the way I met her, in our home, one day a week for a long time.
Did you know that she could play and sing so well?
Not for 4 or 5 years of her being in our household. And it was only after I started playing that my sister Peggy discovered that Elizabeth Cotton could play music.
How did Peggy discover that?
Well, now, I don't know it from Peggy's side, but Libba Cotton would say, always tell the story on her programs that Peggy discovered her playing the family guitar and that Ms. Cotton was really embarrassed because she wasn't supposed to be doing that.
Tell us the story behind the specific recording we're going to hear that was made in 1952, I believe in your house.
Yes. Well, at this point, we had known that Libba Cotton could play guitar for about 6 or 8 months, and Pete came to visit us, my brother Pete. And so we asked Libba Cotton after a whole day's work, and for her, a day's work was, I think, at least 10 or 11 hours. We asked her if she would play some for us and Pete, and my father had just brought a tape recorder home from work. She didn't have a guitar at the time, and she'd been playing the family gut string guitar. They didn't have nylon yet. And she played a guitar that had steel strings on it that a friend of Pete's had brought down. And so her touch was a little bit unsure at times, but she was wonderfully solid even then. It's amazing to think of a woman who was 55, hadn't played guitar much for about 25 or 30 years, discovering again that she could play guitar and playing for us.
So let's hear her recording of In the Sweet By and By, recorded in your home in 1952.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Cotton, as recorded by Mike Seeger and his family in 1952. And that recording has been reissued on Mike Seeger's new album, Close to Home, old-time music from Mike Seeger's collection recorded between 1952 and 1967. Mike Seeger, the field recordings that have been collected on your CD, Close to Home, span 1952 to 1967. Tell us how you defined your mission in making these recordings back then.
I was reared by a family, by two avant-garde musicians, that is, who composed and thought about modernist music, who discovered folk music in the 30s. And they'd always had a feeling of mission, whether it was modernist music or a modernist approach to folk music. And when I'm talking of folk music, I mean traditional rural music of the working class or agricultural people, folks from who are the majority, I guess, of people in the United States until industrialization started. Anyway, what I want to say is that they gave me this feeling of mission, too. It just wiped off. It rubbed off on me. And I hear all this music around, or I'd heard all this music around me, and I wanted to, for other people to be able to hear it and to be able to play it and appreciate these wonderful musicians.
When you started traveling around, entering people's homes and recording them, were you always welcome? Did you always already have a relationship with the people whose homes you entered?
I was very music-centered. I was always that way. And so I usually entered people's homes on the basis of, I like your music and I like you. And usually that communicated. Only once or twice did it not. And it's only when perhaps there were other issues that were preventing it on the other person's side.
Were you performing yourself when you were when you started recording other people?
Yes. I started trying to play. My mother got me started, really, when I was in my late teens. And, yes, I could always play a little bit, and I think that interested people. I wasn't dressed very well. I didn't have much money, and I just liked what I was doing, and there was no money involved at all, and there still isn't much.
Let's hear another recording that's on your new anthology. This is a 1962 recording featuring Ernest and Hattie Stoneman. And the song is Gather in the Golden Grain. Tell us something about these performers, how you met them, how this recording came to be.
I'd heard recordings of Ernest and Hattie Stoneman first on a recording, an anthology called The Anthology of American Folk Music, edited by Harry Smith, which incidentally is going to be re-released by Smithsonian Folkways in August. And I went to a fiddler's contest in rural Maryland, somewhere over near Glen Burnie, which is near Baltimore. And they had a lot of rural people, mostly from the South, but some from around in the rural area of rural Maryland, too. Ernest Stoneman was there. He was there with his own band, and I was so struck by his playing of the auto harp and just by seeing him and hearing him and realizing that this man who had recorded back in the 20s, in the 1960s, was still there, that I went and asked him if I could visit him at his home, and which I did. I asked he and his wife, Hattie, if they would record a couple of the gospel songs. And the old pump organ that she'd given him when they married, where it was kind of leaky, I think, and they could only make it through about a minute of the song. But Hattie was always reluctant to play. So it only lasts a minute, but it's a wonderful little piece of music.
It's a wonderful minute. Why don't we hear it?
Be vain, for he will increase yield.
That's recorded in 1962, recorded by my guest Mike Seeger, and featured on his new anthology, Close to Home, old-time music from Mike Seeger's collection, 1952 to 1967. You point out in the liner notes that they're singing one octave apart from each other. Is that a common way of singing together in rural country music?
Well, it's an informal way of singing together, and that's the way they sing in church. And it, in my mind, it's a way of singing that predates the ideas of harmony, which are pretty popular these days. It's considered kind of corny now to sing either in unison or in octaves. So it's a family way, really. It's a family style.
I want to move on to another tune collected on this new CD, and it features Pearly Grandma Davis, about whom I know nothing. The song is called It's These Hard Times. Tell us something about her and this recording.
I wish I could tell you more about Grandma Davis. Back in the 50s and 60s, before the mid-60s, Fiddler's Conventions in the South had a lot of old-time country people who just show up and play a few songs. Quite often there were songs that would be out of their home repertoire, you know. And I was very struck by her singing and playing when I saw her, heard her at the Union Grove Fiddler's Convention about 1960 or 61. So on another trip south with John Cohen, we were doing a swing through the South, especially through North Carolina, Tennessee. We stopped off and saw her and her family, and she lived in a nice frame house in Roaring River, North Carolina, without electricity. She didn't trust electricity. So we went across the street to one of her kids' houses and had a wonderful evening of music there. And this is just one song of several that she sang during the course of that evening of us singing and playing for one another, really, because John and I played some, too, for them. We just entertained one another, and she entertained us with this.
This is Pearly Grandma Davis, recorded in 1961.
Concerning those boys who lives about here, it is the truth, boys, you can't disown. You pull a girl about like a dog well a bone, and it's these hard times. Girls about here, the wood where the hoops won't for the comfort, it is just for the looks. A belief to my soul, if the boys won't talk, they'd worm so large, they take a sidewalk, and it's these hard times. Girls about here, they'll grin like a cat, they'll tittle and they'll tattle, and they don't know what it said. It is the truth, boys, you can't disown. You pull a girl about like a dog well a bone, and it's these hard times. Tell a good girl, wherever she be, no flashy things on you never will see. No laces, no braces, no such other thing, but a long-tailed bonnet pinned under her chin, and it's these hard times. Yonder's a doctor I'd almost got. Believe to my soul, he's the worst in the lot. He says he'll cure you for a half you possess, and then he'll kill you and take all the rest. These hard times.
Music recorded by Mike Seeger, included on his new CD, Close to Home. We'll talk more after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with folk musician Mike Seeger, some of his field recordings from the 50s and 60s are collected on his new CD, Close to Home. Now, I think one of the people who you recorded more than any other is Doc Boggs. What do you think his importance is musically?
Well, he just had a gut feeling to his music through his voice and a certain way of picking the banjo on some of the songs that really just get to you. I'm without words, Terry, because I think it's probably a good idea just to listen to the music.
Okay. And why don't we do that? Tell us about the recording that you made that's featured on the CD of Doc Boggs.
Well, I went way out of my way to try to find this man, because when I was 10 or 11 years old, I heard recordings of his for the first time, and I always wanted to find this man or find out what he was about. And by asking various different people, I eventually, on a trip from California to home in New Jersey at the time, I found Doc Boggs, met him, recorded three, four new LPs at the time, and got him to travel around a little bit to some of the folk concerts and festivals. So I got to know him pretty well, and I recorded him at his home. And this was for an LP. Most of the recordings that I made here were not for any idea that they'd ever be released commercially. This one, however, was.
This is Doc Boggs, recorded in 1964. Doc Boggs, recorded in 1964 by my guest Mike Seeger. And we should mention that Doc Boggs is also featured on that anthology of American folk music compiled by Harry Smith, which is getting reissued now, a very influential anthology. And there's a chapter on Doc Boggs in Greil Marcus's new book about Bob Dylan, The Basement Tapes. Mike Seeger, I'd like to hear more about you and your life in music. It seems to me you're really part of the first generation of country folk musicians who weren't born into that tradition. You're from the urban north, a member of the educated middle class. And the music that most inspired you was music largely played by rural southerners who didn't have the kind of formal education that you are from. Did you see yourself that way as part of the first generation of people who were playing music that was traditional music, but they weren't part of that tradition?
I don't know how much I ever thought about that. I rebelled against formal education, which my parents had so much of. I learned the music by ear, and I just loved it so much. Ever since I was 4 or 5 years old, I was singing these old songs, and then when I started playing, I was playing in the style that appealed to me most. Maybe it's because we didn't have a radio. Maybe it's because I only listened to this kind of music because that's the only kind of recorded music we had at home. But something in me resonated, or these songs, these sounds resonated to me, and it's been the center of my life ever since.
Now, you mentioned that you grew up without a radio. I find it very interesting that your parents, who were music scholars and composers and teachers, and were probably among the first families to have a tape recorder in their own home, didn't own a radio. Why not?
Well, actually, the tape recorder was only there for one day.
Oh.
My mother did have a transcription turntable through which I could hear all of these things. That was in the day when you had to sharpen cactus needles to listen to records. And we didn't have any commercial records. We only had field recordings to listen to. They were determined that I wouldn't be reared on commercial mass media, which was just getting started in the 20s and 30s. And, well, they succeeded.
Was their goal in life to make sure you never heard Louis Armstrong or Bing Crosby or Duke Ellington?
Maybe Bing Crosby out of those. They were not I think they weren't impressed by a lot of jazz even. But they wanted me to... Well, they felt that, I think, that this music had been the oral tradition for people for centuries and centuries. And they just wanted to continue, although obviously within a modern life. I don't think they ever expected that I would be doing this for a living. They just wanted me to have it in my life.
Mike Seeger's new CD is called Close to Home, featuring his field recordings from 1952 to 67. He'll be back in the second half of our show. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Mike Seeger. His new anthology, Close to Home, features field recordings he made in the South in the 1950s and 60s. Seeger is from a musical family. His half-brother is Pete Seeger. His sister is folk singer Peggy Seeger. His father, Charles Seeger, was a musicologist. His mother, Ruth Crawford Seeger, was a modernist composer. When we left off, Mike was telling us that his parents loved traditional music, but the art songs his mother composed were hardly folk music. I thought I'd play a song that your mother wrote that was recently recorded by Dawn Upshaw. This is a song called White Moon, and it's a setting for a poem by Carl Sandburg. And I just want to give a sense of what your mother was up to.
She had been up to this... two or three years before I was born and basically gave up that kind of music.
Oh, no kidding.
When I was born or shortly before. And they went completely over into folk music so that we didn't know anything about that kind of music. Well, I had one 78 RPM record of her string quartet, which I enjoyed listening to when I was a kid.
Well, let's hear this recording of White Moon, then we'll find out why your mother abandoned that kind of song. This is Dawn Upshaw.
White moon comes in on a baby face. The shafts across her bed are flimmering. Out on the land, white moon shines, shines and glimmers against gnarled shadows. All silver to slow twisted shadows falling across the
I think that gives us a sense of the song, a song written by your mother, Ruth Crawford Seeger, a setting for a poem by Carl Sandburg, sung by Dawn Upshaw. So tell us why she gave up that kind of music around the time you were born.
Oh, this was in the early days of the Depression, when there was a lot of soul-searching by... modernist musicians, by a lot of people, looking for what is American, looking for something that would have some social activist, political activist use. And they shifted from one avant-garde to another, I guess, from the avant-garde of composed music making to the avant-garde of thinking about music that would have social use and also the continuity of musical traditions and trying to respect American culture as it was.
Did your mother feel the music was too intellectualized, too removed from popular taste?
From everyday reality and from the experience of most people, yes. It has a different use. And I think that's the nicest recording of that I've heard.
Oh, it's a lovely recording. It's Dawn Upshaw. What else can you say? It's really a lovely recording.
But it's just different. My mother was absolutely intrigued with the complexities of rural music making, singing especially.
Mm-hmm. Now, your half-brother is Pete Seeger. Did you actually live with him when you were growing up? I know he is, I believe, your father's son with your father's first wife, who was not your mother. So he has the same father, but a different mother. How old was he when you were born?
He would have been 14, and we didn't live together, no, but we had visits, and they were always high points.
Wait, was he somebody who inspired you or someone who made you think that you had to stay away from what he was doing because just to preserve your own identity?
There are parts of what he did which influenced me a lot early on, and others have stayed with me. The overall ideas of, how would I say it? Attitude towards music has a lot. I feel like I've gotten a lot from Pete. Early on, yes, I learned a little bit from Pete, more than a little bit.
When you say you learned a lot about attitude toward music, what attitude are you talking about?
I think it has to do with inclusiveness of attitude towards other musicians. Of course, some of this came from my parents, too, but a lot of it came from Pete.
Now, your new CD is a field recordings that you made between 1957 and 1962. In 1958, you co-formed the New Lost City Ramblers, which was a group of people like you who weren't a part of that Southern world tradition but loved the music and wanted to play it and sing it and keep it alive. Tell us a little bit about founding the group.
Well, it was an accident. In those days, in the 50s, if you played this kind of music, you knew that there were only about 5 or 10 people in the cities playing it, and you knew them. And then we were also aware of that this music was dying out gradually in the South, being basically dominated over by contemporary commercial forms. So we did know one another. We met Tom Paley and John Cohen and myself. We met we met separately at various times in the 50s. But the three of us played together on a radio program, just kind of guesting. And it seemed to work well enough so that John said, well, how about we record for Folkways and how about we do a concert in New York? And I said, okay. And from then on, we've been a group with one change of personnel in 1962.
Well, let me play a track from the New Lost City Ramblers CD that you recently put out, first recording together in 23 years. And why don't we hear a song that a lot of people will know as an old kid song, Skip to My Lou. Why did you adults decide to do this?
Because we like the song. Some people think it's pretty far out to have a song that says Little Red Wagon Painted Blue. And it's also just a playful song. And it was also, in its original form, meant for accordion game in the days when they thought that dancing in the usual way was sinful. And so this was not meant to be done with sinful musical string instruments. It was supposed to be sung by people in their teens to keep them out of trouble.
Oh, I never knew that.
Well, that's what the folklore is anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, this is Skip to My Lou, Mike Seeger, lead vocals, harmonica, and ukulele.
My darling, yonder she comes, and how do you do? Yonder she comes, and skip to my loo. Yonder she comes, and how do you do? Skip to my loo, my darling. Pretty as a red bird.
bird, prettier too. Pretty as a red bird, skip-a-maloo. Pretty as a red bird, prettier too. Skip-a-maloo, my darling.
Skip to My Lou, that's the New Lost City Ramblers with my guest Mike Seeger, lead vocals. It seems to me one of the things you really have in common with so many of the country musicians, old-time musicians, whose work you documented over the years is that you come from a family of music people. I mean, Part of the old-time tradition, I think, is a family tradition. There were so many bands that were made up of families, husbands and wives who sang together. The children maybe sang together, too. And, I mean, gee, in your family, you had, you know, your parents, and then Pete Seeger's part of the family, and your sister Peggy, who's also a singer. I mean, what a great musical family.
We enjoy playing music together, and it's one of the things that we do when we do get together on holidays or just on visits. I feel real fortunate. Yes, I feel real fortunate.
Well, Mike Seeger, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, it's been fun, Terry. Thanks for asking.
Mike Seeger has a new anthology of field recordings he made in the rural South between 1957 and 62. It's called Close to Home.